The Academy for Justice at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law is starting a 3-day conference today, looking at the first 50 years of the Controlled Substance Act and what the next 50 could look like. The federal law created a system to control the manufacture, import, distribution, and prescription of medications that are prone to abuse. But our nation is recovering from an opioid epidemic the law was created to prevent. With me to talk about the impact of the Controlled Substance Act is the event's organizer, ASU Law Professor Valina Beattie. She's also Deputy Director of the Academy for Justice, a center that connects research with policy reform. Valina, what was the purpose of the Controlled Substance Act when it was implemented?
It was established to respond to and regulate what we call drugs, to actually create schedules to classify different drugs and what should be legal and what should be illegal.
Well, so when we talk about schedules and classification, it's really complex, I guess. Were there certain drugs people were thinking about specifically at the time?
Yes. In fact, marijuana was very much on their minds. And marijuana was classified as a Schedule I drug, which is the most severe, highly punished, not permitted to test it or use it for psychological or experimental purposes. Yeah.
Was it intended to be productive and not punitive, or was it supposed to increase knowledge, or did it end up turning into something that was sort of utilized in the war on drugs a decade later?
Absolutely ended up being utilized to restrict any type of educational value, any type of testing on these substances, and also to criminalize use of them. So it shifted control over to the DEA. So it really was about criminalizing and punishing with incarceration the use of these substances.
What have you seen in your life as an attorney when it comes to how people have had to deal with this and navigate their way through the system?
Sure. I was a federal prosecutor in Washington, D.C., but I actually prosecuted a number of district crimes, including drug offenses. And what I generally saw was that it was poor people and people of color who were being brought into court on these charges and serving sentences.
Mm-hmm. And what did that do for you in terms of your perspective?
I felt that there needed to be a more nuanced approach to how we were tackling drug offenses. And since that time, I've also come to believe we need to look at the public health component of it and how can we stop the demand.
Mm-hmm.
So our focus has been on trying to address the supply. So let's go after the drug dealer. Let's stop the supply. Well, we're seeing with fentanyl right now, it's just flooding into our country, and we're not being very effective, unfortunately, at stopping the supply. So what can we do instead to decrease the demand? What can we do to decrease addiction so there won't be the demand for the fentanyl?
So when it comes to the CSA, as we move forward, legalization of at least recreational marijuana is popping up in many, many states. Arizona voters will get another shot in November to determine what they want to do with it. How does that sort of throw everything into the mix, considering it's still a federal violation, yet states are doing their thing? How does all this affect CSA going forward?
Yeah, well, on the state level, I'll just say I take my students to go sit in on local trial court, and they're always surprised that they see so many people being charged with felony charges for marijuana possession every day here in Phoenix. But if those individuals just had the, you know, $200, $300 to buy a medicinal marijuana card, they wouldn't face those charges. So there's this dramatic poverty disparity there in how you're treated with using marijuana specifically. In terms of federal versus state, that's a big question we're going to address in the conference, where we're going to have a marijuana town hall in the afternoon. And we have Kat Packer, who directs regulation of marijuana in LA. So she's going to be able to talk from the perspective of a state where it is legal and how are they regulating it, versus we'll have speakers from the Drug Policy Alliance and from RAND talking about the complications of federal versus state. But what can Arizona do now?
What can Arizona do now? What are some options?
Well, beyond Kat Packer, we're actually going to have a number of marijuana regulators from different states coming in, because there's such variety between medicinal, like we have here, versus full legalization. And what's going to be a smart solution? We see the legislature right now considering passing legislation so there could be more control over how it is regulated. It's a big issue, and we look forward to talking about it.
I guess I'm struck by even perception. I ask you this as an attorney, but also someone who clearly understands the goings-on in the world as well, because we know the perception comes up. There are still some people who just when they hear marijuana, they think reefer madness.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other people who feel like, well, why was this illegal in the first place? How do you reconcile those when it actually comes to the public square?
Yeah, so this often comes down to not just in marijuana, but other controlled substances about kind of a morality viewpoint and whether it's the individual's fault that they're using this substance versus health conditions and whether it's based on addiction. Now, that applies more to other controlled substances than marijuana, but I still think there's that same morality framework around it. So it's just a very different way of, there's two disparate ways of viewing use.
How has the opioid epidemic illustrated either any shortcomings with the CSA or anything that may complicate the issue, let's say?
Right. So the opioid crisis has, I believe, highlighted how the CSA is failing. It's failing at stopping overdoses. Having this punitive response is failing at decreasing the demand. It's failing at stopping the supply from coming in. And it's also, I think the opioid crisis is highlighting the usefulness of marijuana, like how marijuana can be used to ostensibly actually move people away from using opioids. Mm-hmm. So that's a possibility there as well. But we don't know more about that because since marijuana is a Schedule I drug under the CSA, it's classified as a very harmful, the most harmful type of drug, we can't do research on it. So we can't find out if that could actually help in our opioid crisis.
This seems to be an issue generally, at least as it relates to marijuana, that is becoming less partisan. You will see some on the right, some on the left, and it's sort of a mishmash of sometimes very strange bedfellows when it comes to that. What does that tell you about the potential for progress going forward on this?
I think it's the same thing that's happening with criminal justice reform in general, that we see people from many different backgrounds and perspectives coming together saying the system as we have it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. The system as we have it connected to marijuana and criminalizing marijuana use doesn't work right now. There's different paths forward, so let's figure out what's going to be the best fit for Arizona.
Valina Beattie, thanks for coming in. Good to meet you.
Thank you.
Valina Beattie is an ASU law professor and deputy director of the Academy for Justice.